I would like you and I this week to explore sex. I'm going to share with you what led me to the realization this week. I'm a little bit embarrassed about this. It should, you know, it's something I should have been aware of a long time ago. But I'm going to share with you what made me realize that sex can be a beautiful, tender thing, and it doesn't just have to be wham, bam, touch my cock, goddamn. You know, it can be an intimate, shared moment of beauty between two consenting humans. I'm going to share that with you. I'm also going to discuss my social media addiction. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll realize that I've decided enough is enough this week. I'm going to explore why. Plus, for the first time, I've been sent three questions from an ongoing listener. She's decided to send me three questions because she knows we're in a lockdown and she knows I'm searching every single week for shit to talk to you about. So she sent me three questions and I'm looking forward to going through them and answering them and sharing my responses with you. So without further ado, let's begin with let's go for the social media addiction thing. So I posted on Instagram this week. In fact, it was a simultaneous post across Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook that I am going to call it quits on social media for a little while. And it wasn't a decision I took lightly, necessarily, for reasons which will become immediately apparent in a bit. But it just became glaringly obvious. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be as honest with you as I can. If you listen to this podcast long enough, you'll realize that sharing isn't my preferred thing to do, especially when it's delving into the depths of me, you know. I think I've stupidly admitted about 3 weeks ago that my MO has historically been talking as much as I, outside of the parameters of this podcast, you know, the very design of a podcast requires me to talk about me. I get that. But this is quite a unique beast in that way. But generally speaking, in my documentary, short films, on my everyday life, I will do all I can to talk about whoever I'm presented with at the time, because it enables me to not talk about myself, because everybody loves talking about. If I'm talking about you, you'll usually be happy and you'll not be in any rush to ask me about me. So the thing is, right, listen, I've become aware recently that I can be on social for like 3 hours and it feels like 10 minutes. And I get to the end of that 3 hours and it's like, hang on a minute. You've just been sat stewing in your pants, sweating for 3 hours, doing nothing. Now, the pants wasn't necessarily relevant, but you know, I like to paint a vivid picture. And I don't exclusively use social media in my pants, by the way. It's just that as we speak right now, it's like 10:30 and I live in the attic and it's just really hot. I'm not in my pants, but I'm kind of thinking I might be. What the fuck am I talking about? Yeah, listen, we all sit on our pants sometimes. But my point is, I will never forget, I think it was two Sundays ago, I woke up and I did what I do, or should I say what I have been doing for far too long. First thing I did was reach for my phone, turn it on, and just start dicking about on Twitter and Instagram. I think I reached for my phone somewhere between 9:30 and 10. And then bizarrely, it got to about 3 o'clock and I was still lying on my bed. Like I'd had the decency to get from under the duvets and I was lying on top of the duvets. I'd had some breakfast and all that shit. Like that wasn't just a 5 hour stretch of me in my bed. I had moved. I had burnt some calories between going to the toilet and making my porridge. But I think it was about two. Actually, I think I might have had like a brief nap in between that spell as well. I don't know. It was a Sunday, so like I feel I have a pass. And it was 3 o'clock and I was like, dude, this is just getting too much. Bearing in mind, up until that point, I was aware that things were getting a little bit worrying. And I think it was just that particular Sunday when it got to 3 o'clock and all I had to show for my day was porridge and an empty bladder, and I thought, oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, so fast forward a little bit, and I don't know if you've been reflecting on your existence during this lockdown, but I've been doing it a lot. Not exclusively social media, just generally like life. What do I want? It, you know, depending on your angle, I've probably lived about half of my life now. I've got another half to go, which I'm deeply grateful for. So I'm starting to think, how do I want the other half of my life to be? So this has been that question I have asked about many areas of my life in terms of goals, objectives, what I want to accomplish, who I want to be as a human, how much I want to earn, which is in itself quite a remarkable question for me to ask. I've never been money orientated, and I think I've mentioned this before. That's something of a downfall in the past. But, you know, I've just been thinking a lot about things, and I don't know why social media came in there per se, but I suppose because we've all been in lockdown, let's be honest, we've all probably been using it more than we usually do. And I use it a shitload anyway. But I don't know. Some things just happened, you know, and sometimes just a series of seemingly unconnected things happen, but then you actually just look back and think, something is trying to tell me something here. Someone is trying to tell me something here. So it was not that long after that ridiculous 5-hour wasted day in my bed. And then there's a new documentary out. I can't remember what it's called. Screened Out. I think it's called Screened Out, which is talking about the addictive nature of socials. Yeah, I've seen a few of these documentaries in the past, but, you know, can't get enough of them. And then just randomly on YouTube, I stumbled across this interview by this guy. He's a tech. What's his official title? He's a computer philosopher. I hope you know what that is, because I haven't got a foggiest. He's a computer philosopher on Channel 4 News, and he's talking about the addictive nature of social media. Now, he gives this anecdote, and he's relating this anecdote to Donald Trump. And he says this, which was really interesting. One of the many things he said that was interesting, but this guy is called Jaron Lanier, and this is what he has to say about Trump's Twitter addiction.
His character has been really damaged by his Twitter addiction.
Because of the reaction he gets from each tweet.
Yeah. So, you know what happens in addiction is the addict becomes hooked not just on the good part of the addiction experience, but on the whole cycle. So a gambler is not just addicted to winning, but to this whole process where they mostly lose. And in the same way, the Twitter addict or the social media addict becomes addicted to this engagement, which is often unpleasant, where they're engaged in these really abusive exchanges with other human beings. And only once in a while is that, you know, you can watch Trump, like every once in a while, there'll be this tweet where somebody likes him. And that's when he gets his little, we call it in the trade, the dopamine hit. That's what it's called in Facebook, for instance. He gets his little dopamine hit, and then he dives in for more negativity and things. Then he gets it again. And you can see the addiction playing out.
Now, I can't necessarily relate to the bit about being addicted to hostility, negativity. I don't relate to that per se. But when he's talking about the dopamine hit and being addicted to the engagement, being addicted to the likes and the retweets, I can wholeheartedly, unflinchingly, embarrassingly, and apologetically, I feel like I should apologize to me. But maybe I shouldn't, because it's a chemical thing, isn't it? That's just how addiction works. But I'm going to apologise to me anyway, because I think I owe myself an apology, because I've actually seen the light in the last 2 days. But yes, I certainly became addicted to that cycle, and it was just insidious. It's not, you know, these behemoth social platforms have been proven. They've engineered addiction into the way they function. Like, nobody denies that. The platforms themselves don't deny that. You don't have to search that far on YouTube to find former employees who were instrumental in the genesis of these platforms saying our job was to addict people to them. Now, this wasn't news to me per se, but you know what it's like? Sometimes you watch enough interviews saying the same thing and you just have to stop and just question yourself. And that's how it was for me. And I just thought, okay, enough is enough. Now, if you remember what I said about 3 minutes ago about, you know, when just a sequence of things just line up and make you think the universe is trying to tell you something. I had this eureka moment. I think it was around Wednesday. You know how I'm really into metacognition? Go back to episode 14 or something when I'm talking about metacognition and how fascinated I am by understanding a little bit of how the brain works. And something I've heard a lot recently is that whatever you focus on expands. Whether you're focusing on something positive or negative, it will expand. If you're inherently quite a negative person focusing on the doom and gloom, you'll probably see more of it because it's just all you're thinking of. It's all you'll experience. And so then I started applying that to the business of addiction. And I thought every time I've tried to give social a break in the past, the thing I've been telling myself has been the same. Oh, God, this is really difficult. It's going to be hard. This is really difficult. It's going to be hard. Then I just thought this week, well, if that's what I'm telling myself, then that's what it's going to be. If I'm telling myself every 2 minutes is going to be hard, then I bet it's going to be hard, right? And I just thought, what if I decide to give it a break for a bit and I tell myself it's going to be the easiest thing I've ever fucking done. And every time, because I know I'm, you know, we all function a habit. So I know that there's going to be times I'm going to want to reach for my phone. And I'll say it's hard and I'll just stop myself and say, well, it's not hard though, is it? It's really easy. And I just did that. And it's just been an absolute revelation. I honestly, hand on heart, considering it was Wednesday when I said I'm going to call it a day, I thought it'd be really difficult. But from the get-go, it's been bizarrely, it's just not been a challenge. And I wonder if that is because I just told myself it's going to be easy. Do you think there's any merit to that? Do you think as humans, do you believe what I just said? What you focus on expands. What you anticipate you will experience. Do you believe in that? Or do you think that we are just bumbling through Earth, bumping into instance? Do you think we just bumble through our lives just experiencing stuff? Or do you think we influence what we experience by our own thoughts, expectations, anticipations? And I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to tell myself this is going to be easy. And it's just been, it's been obscene. And I'm just thinking, is it, hang on, is it that easy? Like, when you see people like Paul McKenna asking people to pay him $10,000 for a dose of hypnosis, could they like save that $10,000 and just tell themselves that getting off cigarettes is actually going to be the easiest thing I'm ever going to do? I feel a little bit guilty saying this because there's probably going to be people who've tried to smoke thinking, no, that isn't what you do, you prick. I have a certain sympathy with that because it can't be that easy. But it was for me. That's all I'm saying. So I'd be fascinated. So this isn't something that we hear about often. We don't, in the mainstream, whether it's the mainstream medical arena, the mainstream social arena, we're very rarely exposed to anything that has anything to do with how we can control our own mind. We're just not. Like, you have to dig into, you have to dig into like these life coaches or public speakers or experts to find it. But the older I get, the more I'm actually starting to think that shit should be taught at school. The more I've started exploring the mind, it's the first time I've actually thought kids might not be a bad thing to have, actually, because I'd love to impart some of this on a mini CK. But apart from that, I've never really been in any rush to have offspring. But it'd be quite good to just share some of these things because the difference that it has is remarkable. And it spans everything I do, even my content. I think there's a video on YouTube. I don't know if you've ever seen that video uploaded to YouTube where it was, this is probably the perfect thing for you to watch if you want to see this live. It was pissing it down. I was in Sheffield walking home and it was just raining. And Bob Proctor is someone that speaks on the mind a lot. And he always says, you know, he says things like, there's no such thing as good and bad. Everything just is. For every good, there's a bad. For every bad, there's a good. And I remember that day it was raining. And I just remember Bob saying, there's no such thing as good or bad. Everything is what it is. For every good, there's a bad. For every bad, there's a good. There's an opposite to everything. And it was raining. And I just thought to myself, well, what is the... He says, if you look hard enough, you'll always find a good. And I just thought, well, what's the good in this situation? And I just thought, well, something that would be good is if I asked someone if I could share their umbrella, given this torrential rain, and that person said, yes, that'd be really good. In fact, I've just found the video now. Let me just play the first 10 seconds for you. You can just see me bumbling on.
I've been doing a lot of exploration into mindset recently. One thing I've heard is that nothing's bad.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just going to repeat myself if I play that video. But long story short, what I want you to type into YouTube is, would you share your umbrella with a stranger? Episode 24. Just put that into YouTube. Would you share your umbrella with a stranger? Episode 24. Maybe put in CK Golding as well. And It's a 4-minute video, and I just walk up to someone. It's raining, and I just say, right, I'm going to just walk up to someone and see if they'll share their umbrella. And the first person I walked up to, just randomly, they looked like students, boy and a girl, and they were bang up for sharing their umbrella. They were so sweet. It was a beautiful moment. And that's one of the, that was the first time I actually started to think there must be something into this mind shit. Like, you know, whatever you focus on expands. And I was just focusing on finding some cool humans on that wet day. And that's what I found. Anyway, slightly off topic, but I just said social media was going to be easy, and so far I'm stunned. I'm going to share a text message I sent with my friend who told me coming off social media is ridiculous. As a creator, as someone who wants to achieve visibility and appreciation of his work, going off social media is just ridiculous. And I'll tell you why I told him to kiss my ass in a minute, but I just want you to be aware of the biggest thing for me. Is waking up this morning, I actually felt for the first time refreshed. I had a conversation with a mate of mine about 8 months, well, 6 months ago, something like that. He has a condition called fibromyalgia. I don't know if you're familiar with fibromyalgia, but some of the symptoms are, there's, I had a symptoms list here a minute ago. It's kind of, main symptom is pain all over the body. Tiredness, like I think tiredness is one of the biggest ones, feeling really tired all the time. And I'm not saying I have this, but he was telling me, I said, I don't know, maybe I have. I don't have the ache thing, but kind of tiredness is one of the things. And he said to me, well, when you wake up in the morning, do you ever feel refreshed or do you feel groggy? And I didn't really know what, I don't know what waking up and feeling refreshed meant. So I was like, I don't know. I just wake up and I just do what I've got to do. I don't jump out of bed by any stretch of imagination. So I didn't really know what he meant by refreshed. But today, 2 days into this social detox, I could have like skipped out of bed. For the first time that I can remember, I was excited about lifting the weights because I like having like set of weights at home and stuff. So I'm not a big fan of gyms. I do everything I need to do at home. And I was like, yeah, I'm ready for a session. And I skipped out of bed and I did feel refreshed, and I knew what refreshed meant. And I don't know if that has anything to do with a social detox, but I'm obviously not going to bed staring at my screen being the last thing I do for the last 3 days. So I don't know if that is a contributor, but I'm willing to take that it might be. And this social detox is not indefinite. It's not forever, but I definitely think I need a good 4 weeks away. And I can't even explain how, I'm going to excuse, you know how I like painting vivid pictures. I'm going to excuse myself or ask you to excuse me for what I'm going to say next, but it's the best analogy I can offer you for how my mind feels in the last 3 days. It feels like my head has taken an almighty dump, a massive shit, right? I swear to God, it's just liberated itself of shit. And whoo, it just feels empty. My head feels empty, when in the past it was just full of garbage. And I'm just looking back on what I was doing, and it was just scrolling through Twitter, everybody sharing their opinions on everything and anything. Same on Instagram. And I'm kind of looking back on that me, and I'm thinking, yeah, no wonder your head felt bloated, dude, because that's exactly what it was. I don't know. Like, I don't know that the human brain is set up to consume as much input as we receive in 2020 as humans, even if you take social media out of it. Like, if you think about what we're bombarded with on a daily basis, the messaging, the input, the stuff, it's just obscene when you compare that to not even that long ago. Like, if you compare it to, I don't know, like the 60s, 70s, if you want, like the stuff our brain is now having to compute and process is just extraordinary. So just by taking out that small little bit of the pie, and I've noticed the rewards immediately. It's quite staggering. It really is. So let me share the message that I shared, or should I say exchanged, my mate, Johnny, one of my besties. Johnny sent me this when he saw my announcement online. Did I just read correctly? You're off all socials for a while. Dude, what are you doing? Things are starting to move for you. You're cutting off your visibility. Honestly, now is not the time to go dark. The world's been retreating for the last 10 weeks. This is your time to shine. Drive forward. What inspired this detox? I do love a supportive mate. Dickhead. So I'm going to have to ask you again to excuse me, because this is quite a long and lengthy reply, but I thought I might as well just give him the full answer. And if I'm to be honest with you, in the interest of full disclosure, I also thought, well, it'll give me something to talk to the people about on Sunday in the podcast. Refreshing, not to bore the shit out of them for a while. So this is what I replied. Why am I cutting off my visibility? Because I've got better at questioning my default reflexes. I've got better at asking myself why I think certain things. Do you not think I've considered the loss of momentum? Of course I have. But the loss of momentum is a bullshit fear I've been programmed to perceive by years of marketing spin about algorithm, influencer talk, and audience building articles. If you think a few weeks away from social media is going to harm my visibility, my progress, then I would argue you need some time away yourself. The toxic way social media changes people's behaviour and perception of themselves started to really bother me. Picking up my phone every 3 minutes to check likes, engagement, follows. Utterly gross. My patience and attention span started to plummet to the point where I couldn't focus on anything. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but my focus and attention span really was almost as small as my brother's cock. I thought I'd just put that in because I know we'll enjoy that. I started to become self-obsessed. Me, me, me. It became a me, me, me fest. As you know, I'm very fond of me, me, me. But once you start seeing how desperate it looks on other people, you'd be a madman to not see the exact same thing in yourself. Look at the average person's Instagram feed. A never-ending grid of narcissistic self-talk and selfies. Plain odd. I get it. Of course I get it. But nevertheless, odd. Social media is great. It's brought me great opportunities and connections. But to be aware of how it alters our behaviour, mood, character, and just ignore it for some perceived payoff on the horizon is exactly the false anticipation these platforms rely on us believing. That has been proven. They admit it. Studies demonstrate it. In the 24 hours I've reduced my use of social media, Instagram, Facebook, etc., the result of my thinking is mind-blowing. My head is much quieter, and that is exactly what I wanted. Interesting, I made no reference to my head having a shit. Anyway. As for my visibility, I don't know if you're aware, but I can generate momentum whenever I want. It's kind of a skill I've got. Right now, all I want is to think clearly and independent of deliberately manipulative horse shit. Finally, the one thing I kept thinking about every time I questioned whether taking a break was essential was MySpace. I remember very clearly 2 to 3 years when I was legit addicted to MySpace. It was utter madness the time I lost on that platform. It was only when the platform nosedived and everyone jumped ship to Facebook that I looked back and realised what a little I accomplished and how much I lost. Imagine being stupid enough to repeat such damage in history. I'll pass. End of message. To which he replied, I kind of agree with everything you're saying, but get back on it. But I was expecting that of him. That's what he's all about, to be fair. But the reason I've read that to you is I just feel that's the most concise and probably articulate way of me sharing with you how I feel about social and why I've taken some time away from it. And there have been times when I've thought, like, how exactly are you going to share the fact you've got a new podcast out and your listeners are probably going to plummet? Because, you know, I always picked up a couple through putting clips on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. I'd always pick up a few new listeners, which was always really nice. But you know what? It's all or nothing. I'm not going to just dip in just to post the podcast. No, I'm off for at least 4 weeks. So this is where you come in, humans. And I was actually thinking about this before I started. I thought, well, you could just ask listeners to share it around because they're probably not having a detox. And that felt icky. And I thought, well, why does it feel icky? If a podcast you listen to, if they asked you, would you just tweet it or share it or tell your friends about it? Would you? And I was like, absolutely, I'll do it anyway. So here I am, humans, asking you to just do my dirty work, please. I mean, know, I would not be ungrateful were you to decide that every week that CK drops a new podcast, I'll just tweet it or I'll put it on Facebook. I should have probably done this before, to be honest. There's no reason why not, actually. That's one that's never been a strength of mine, asking for help. But from this day forward, please be aware that if you ever want to tell your friends about a short film I've made or a podcast I've made or an insipid analogy about bathroom activities, then just please do. Honestly, I'm off social for 4 weeks, so my listeners are either going to plummet or they will increase because you've done the honourable thing. You get it, don't you? Yeah, I'd be grateful. That'd be wonderful. So I think I've covered everything I wanted to talk to you about social media. Now let's talk about intercourse. I decided this week to watch Normal People. Now, that sounds like I've been peeking on my neighbours, but I haven't. Normal People is a new global phenomenon that I'm proud to say is a British series. It's a coming-of-age drama by the BBC, 12-part episode, each episode 30 minutes, and it stars two British actors, Daisy Edgar-Jones, who plays Marianne, and Paul Mescal, who plays Connell, and they're students, 17. They didn't meet at 17, actually, because they've known each other since 11. And during college, they decide they have feelings for each other, but they don't want to tell anybody, so they have this clandestine relationship. And long story short, it is a very sexually charged drama, but it's not all about shagging. Like, there's a lot of shagging, but it's not all about shagging. And I, to be fair, I quite respect it for this, because, you know, when you know, 17-year-olds are shagging. That, to them, is the world. And I don't know how they could produce this series if not for that truth. So I enjoyed that about it. I mean, it was really well choreographed. And let me just go through what I liked about this, and I'll share with you what I'm not too bothered about. And if you've not watched it, I'm sorry, this will be torture. First of all, why did I actually watch it? Normally, this isn't my kind of thing. I normally avoid this like the plague. But you know how I mentioned earlier on that I've been doing a lot of reflecting and stuff. One of the things I realised is that I'm probably too narrow-minded and I should probably consume more content that doesn't have to be aligned with what I make, just to inform me, if anything, what the public are connected to or engaging with or enjoying. I'm sure there's certainly something I could take from it, even though it's not going to be direct comparison. And Normal People has just been everywhere, all over Twitter. Pre-detox is all I saw people talking about. And it is honestly a global hit. And to be fair, I'm actually really proud of the fact it's a British thing. So I thought I'd watch it and see what I could take from it. Now, here's what I like about it. The performances, I have nothing bad to say. Did I enjoy spending time with those two actors? Absolutely. Were they great actors? Absolutely. Was the thing beautifully shot? Absolutely. Was it interesting at times? Yes. Was I hooked at times? Yes. Did I binge? No, I didn't binge per se. I think there's 12 episodes, and I think the most I watched in any given sitting stroke day was two. I think I watched three one day, so I basically watched it in four across 4 days. And there were certainly times I was like, oh, I wonder what happens next. So it had everything you would hope from in a series. And what I actually liked in the opening probably 7 or 8 episodes, it was actually, everything nowadays is intentionally and deliberately very fast paced to keep our attention, because you know our attention spans have been ripped to shreds, so everything is very paced now. But this was actually the complete opposite. It was very sedate almost, and it had space, and there were scenes when it was just montages of very little happening, but it was beautifully done. So it was like, oh, I can take that, and I appreciated it, because bearing in mind I watched this just as I decided to have a detox, so I realized that slow paced stuff would probably be quite a palate cleanser, so I enjoyed it for that reason. But by episode 9 I was getting a bit fidgety. I was like, okay, can you just end now, please? So I'm going to start talking about what bothered me a little bit. nothing bothered me per se. I mean, I didn't really much care for the ending. I thought the final, like, literally the final scene, I thought, oh God, all right, whatever. There were parts when, there were some times when I was like thinking, I wish someone would just ask that person why they're doing that or why they're not. But there was so many times when people didn't ask why. And I don't know whether that's just kind of, I'm naturally a why asker and I'm naturally inquisitive. But if someone says to me, if I'm shagging someone, right, and she says, I'm going to ask Mark to the dance, I don't know why. But when he said that, when Connell said that to Marianne, she didn't really ask why, she just took it. I was like, Jesus Christ, at least kick him in his balls. It was just odd. But there was a few instances like that. You know, there was nothing I hated overall. I didn't quite get what the brothers' deal was. I don't know why he was such a bell end. But overall, would I recommend someone to watch it? I wouldn't recommend somebody doesn't watch it. Put it that way. You know, sometimes you say to someone, avoid that like the plague, utter dog shit. I wouldn't say that. For all intents and purposes, actually, I probably would recommend you watch it because I know that my tastes very, very seldom marry up to the average human. Often, the stuff that people go mad about, I'm invariably lukewarm about, and vice versa. So the fact that I'm lukewarm would actually lead me to think you would love it. So if you haven't watched Normal People, then yeah, give it a go. Absolutely give it a go. One thing I would say, though, actually, one of the biggest highlights of it did get me thinking, if I had a kid, probably if I had a boy, I would strongly recommend he watches that series, because this is what I was talking about at the top of this episode. It kind of, there's a tenderness to it that is beautiful, and Connell has his flaws, but fundamentally he's a good bloke and he's a caring bloke and he's not a bastard. So he's very sensitive to Marianne's feelings at any given time. So he's like, you know, I think she was a virgin before they started shagging, so he's like always asking if she's all right. I just think that in itself was very, very commendable for the series. That's what I liked about it. It reminded us how dudes should act, especially young dudes, because we're kind of just fed, you know, shag up the back alley nowadays, aren't we? In most TV series, like, sex is almost disposable. But what I liked about this series is that it actually almost reminded us how we used to see this kind of stuff, and it was once upon a time quite sweet, I suppose, and quite tender. And sorry, I just got a bit of a shiver when I said tender. I was like, Jesus Christ, loser. Sorry, but yeah, I just think any young to mid teenage boy watching that series would have a very healthy, positive outlook about sex and relationships, and for that reason, I very much applaud it. And if you have a teenage boy, then let him watch that. I think it'd help him become not an alley shagger, if anything else. So I'm just thinking, was there any alley shagging? I think there was one scene when Connell was seeing somebody else when they split up temporarily, and she tried to shag him. Was it outside a chip shop or something? Talking about how hard his penis was. Quite like that scene, to be honest. I was like, there was no one like her at my school, god damn it. So that's two things I'm going to do. Make sure my boy watches that, and then send him to an Irish school. See if she's knocking about. Anyway, yes, Normal People. It's all right, but it's not blown my mind. I gave it a strong 5.9 out of 10, if you're interested. Yes, good. Right, okay, so final thing. I have a series of questions that have been sent to me on Instagram, and please let this not be the last. Let's not make this the first and last time anybody sends me questions. If you want to send me something online, then do so, because I'll get the alert. Never mind, I'm not on social. I'll get the email notification if you send me a direct message. So if you want to send me three questions on Twitter or Instagram, I would like that too. Let me start with question number one, courtesy of Grace. By the way, before I forget, there's some new blog posts on my website, ckgolding.com. I've decided that although I'm going quiet for a while, I'm going to continue sharing my thoughts on stuff via A, this podcast, and B, my blog. So if you're bored this week, nip over where you will find a post I shared yesterday, which is called "Why is my most watched documentary attracting the most outrage?" Because Waiting with a Killer, my most recent documentary, hit the 10,000 views mark on YouTube this week. So I thought it'd be an ample time to explore some of the comments, specifically those people that aren't keen. So I go through why I think they're not keen in this blog post on my website, ckgolding.com. Also on there, from a couple of weeks past, you will find my chat on the phone with my mate Grace, where we talk about life, hopes, dreams, ambitions, fears, anxieties. It's for some reason I thought it'd be a good idea to record a 1-hour phone call with Grace. So you will find that on there under a post called "Did I Publicly Shame a Friend?" I didn't, but that's what I called it. Right, okay, so Grace is the one that's asked me these questions. Question one, CK, if you could have a phone call with one person, dead or alive, who would it be and why? This is going to annoy you because you're going to go, who? Ugh, never heard of him, bored. But at this question, my answer changes according to where I am in my life. And right now, I've referenced this in previous episodes. I'm just going through episode after episode of US series The Practice, based in a Boston law firm. They represent the lowest of the low: murderers, kidnappers, all the worst. And it's a TV series that was aired between 1999 and 2007. I think there were 8 series, and I'm just obsessed. And the guy that wrote and created and exec produced that is David E. Kelly. He's just a machine. He also went on to write Ally McBeal. I don't know if you're watching that thing with Reese Witherspoon at the minute. Something's called Something Lies. I forget what it's called. I've not watched it yet, but it's on my to-do list because I forgot how much I love David E. Kelly. He's written all kinds over the years. He's an absolute monster. But David E. Kelly, the thing I like about him is he's just got this ability that I've never really seen before, where he can just have one scene where someone's talking about, I don't know, being sexually assaulted by their dad as a kid in this series. Then in the next scene, he's got like the lawyers talking about something completely disconnected that's just very funny. Like they're just having an exchange or a bit of banter between them, and the two scenes are polar opposites, but they don't jar. And he'll just do it back to back. And it's just remarkable. And I don't know how you do that as a writer, because my instinct would be you're either a funny writer or you're a drama writer. But his ability to straddle the two is just unbelievable. And I watched The Practice when it first came out in 99. But I'm like watching it now with fresh eyes 20 years later. In 99, I was oblivious to that writing ability he's got, to just put dark and light back to back. I was completely oblivious to it. Then I started watching it now, 20 years later. I'm like, how did you miss that? That's just remarkable. So what I'm saying is, I right now, if you ask me that question, would probably take a phone call with David E. Kelly, because I'm just slightly in awe of him as a producer. And when I'm creating content like 61 Hugs and The Bench and Waiting with a Killer, I'm very, like, don't underestimate how much in my mind are my heroes who just constantly put out great stuff. Like series after series, they're just brilliant. Like the ability to just create two different series that are both remarkable, I've always respected that, and I've wanted to accomplish something similar. So I'm like, I want to be that guy that, I want to be that guy that people can almost trust that will create something watchable. I don't know if that sounds knobheady, but I'm all right with it if it does. But for as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to be a writer or a creator that you can have a degree of trust that if CK is going to put something out, it will not be dog shit. And I hold that responsibility very high. So yeah, like all the greats, Stephen Bochco, Donald B. Belisario. I understand that nobody knows what I'm talking about now, but these are just like executive producers in the States that I massively respect. Glenn A. Larson, Jesus. Google Glenn A. Larson, you'll be stunned by what that human being has created in terms of US TV shows. Jesus Christ, he's just unbelievable. Right, is it Glenn A. Larson? I think it's Glenn A. Larson. Who's this guy? No, not Glenn A. Larson. No. I mean, he's created good stuff, but that's not who I meant. Who did I mean? This is annoying me now. I'm going to get on to question two in a minute. I'm going to get on to question two in a minute, but there's one guy, I'm trying to remember what his name was, and it's really annoying me now. Oh, I'm annoyed now. Never mind. Let's just move on. Question two. When was the first time you realized you are a creative person? This is an interesting question because as I thought about it, Grace, I was thinking, actually, I don't know that as humans we ever necessarily... I don't know. Actually, saying this out loud sounds ridiculous. I don't know that as humans we ever realize what we are. I think we realize what we're not quicker. For example, I've never thought, God, I'm creative. It's only recently that I've realized what I'm not. I don't know if you're familiar with the left brain, right brain theory, but it's only in recent years that I've become aware of it and it started to make a lot of sense. Let me share with you what the left brain and right brain theory is. The theory is that people are either left-brained or right-brained, meaning that one side of the brain is dominant. If you're mostly analytical and methodical in your thinking, you are said to be left-brained. If you tend to be more creative or artistic, you're thought to be right-brained. Now, there's a lot of people who say that's bullshit, and there's a lot of people who 100% agree with it. I'm no scientist, but based on the opinions of a layman, it makes a lot of sense to me. I would 100% lean on being a right-brained person, and that is the creative artistic. In terms of analytical and methodical, that's just not me, and I get very, very put off by that stuff. I'm not that guy, but I need to have more of it. As I said, the more I reflect on what the next part of my life is, I'm being acutely aware that I want to be better at that stuff. I want to be better at the method and the analytical. And Jesus Christ, here's a flash for you. I sent an invoice out to someone that wants, I sent an invoice out to a couple of new potential clients for PR this week. And it was the first time I've actually realized the stuff that comes naturally to me, that like the creative strategy for a PR campaign, I've usually just bundled that in with the actual media strategy and reaching out to platforms to get my clients featured in X, Y, and Z. But I thought you should be separating all of that out. The outreach is one fee. The creative is another fee. And that's the way that an analytical, methodical person would think, right? And this is the first month I've actually realized that you're just giving stuff away free, technically. And I've sent out three invoices where the creative is invoice and the outreach is invoice. So what I'm saying here is that the creative guy would normally just do the work, but I'm trying to get better at the left brain thinking. And I've been really proud of myself as well, by the way. So, I mean, the client isn't necessarily getting charged more per se. There's just a longer period which they'll have to commission me now because I need to do that initial bit of creative. So I do find the whole left brain, right brain theory absolutely fascinating. So to answer your question, Grace, in terms of when I realized I was creative, it's interesting. I think it's only now that I've been looking at what I'm not that I've realized what I am. And I think this applies to life generally. If you think about yourself, Grace, or you listening to this, whoever, think about yourself. Think how much time do you spend considering what you are? And how much time do you spend considering what you are not? I would argue you spend infinitely more time considering what you are not. We all do. It's almost hardwired into us as humans to spend more time thinking what we're not. Like, oh, I wish I was funnier, or oh, I wish I was better in meeting new people, or I wish I was taller, I wish I was slimmer, I wish I had an extra 3 inches. I don't know. Like, we all spend so much time thinking about what we're not rather than what we are. And I think that applies to me as a creative. And I've never thought, Christ, you're creative. I do know that's a gift I've got, but it's just always been the way, so I've not really thought about it. But yeah, it's only when I started thinking about what I'm not good at, the method and the analytics, that I thought, yeah, you're probably better at the art stuff, at the creative stuff, dude. So that's my answer. And do you think, this is question three, do you think there is a driving force that inspires you? I had to think about this one for a while, and I think for as long as I can remember, it's weirdly stubborn that I the one thing that inspires me more than anything else is certainly within the parameters of content, always has to be different. it always has to look, feel, or inspire different thoughts, feelings, or emotions in the audience. Like, I just... And that's probably why I don't watch much TV or stuff, because it seems to be a bit of a homogenous gloop. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to see anything new there, and I want to create new stuff. And this, again, is a blessing. This is a blessing and a curse. Like, there's no one out there saying we want CK Golding stuff, because no one's really doing it. Nobody knows what they want until they get it. Nobody knew they wanted an iPhone until Jobsy fucking gave you the option. And... I mean, don't get me wrong, maybe it's just because my stuff's shit. I'm open to that argument too. You know, I try to be pragmatic as possible. So I've almost forgotten the question. What did she ask me again? Yes, do you think there's a driving force that inspires you? Yeah, I'm just fascinated by being different. And that's why I love creating these stories that come out of nowhere, but they seem they read like a story, and I'm just a passive guy in the story. Like, I'm not orchestrating anything that happened per se in 61 Hugs or The Bench or Waiting with a Killer. Granted, I have the idea and I go out, but the universe is in control from that point onwards. So I just quite like the fact that you get to the end of something like 61 Hugs and you're thinking, Jesus, I've never seen anything like that before. That's, you know, you can say anything you like about me. You can say, oh, you see, people warm to you, or you're good at storytelling, or you're good at editing, or whatever. You can say any of that stuff. But if you just say, I've never seen anything like that before, then I'll get mildly aroused. And given what we've spoken about today, I think that's a fitting conclusion. So... let me leave it there and invite you to do two things for me until next week. Send me some questions on Twitter, Instagram, etc. I would adore answering them next week. And if you wish to share this podcast with your friends on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, I would be eternally grateful, because I absolutely fucking will not be doing so for the next 4 weeks. See you in a bit.